The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.
Oral question periods put by members. The time now is 2:50, and we will go to 3:50. And I'll recognize the honorable member from Glace Bay.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Premier. Mr. Speaker, as a member who represents a fishing community, one of the main concerns facing the industry is the ability of new entrants to access financing to purchase licenses and vessels. To their credit, Mr. Speaker, the former Conservative government established a new fund through the Fisheries Loan Board to provide financing for new entrants. Mr. Speaker, it's essential that we assist new entrants so that fishing licenses can remain in our communities and sustain those rural communities. My question to the Premier, Mr. Speaker, is your government committed to maintaining the funding for new entrants through the Nova Scotia Fisheries Loan Board?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to thank the member opposite for the question. What he may remember, or maybe doesn't, is that the program put forward by the former government was certainly done at the behest of the members on this side of the House at the time. And Mr. Speaker, we of course recognize the importance of ensuring that there is adequate funding for new entrants into the fishery.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, as the Premier is well aware, new entrants are having a difficult time accessing funding for licenses and vessels through banks, traditional banks, as many lack the necessary collateral to secure the loans. Mr. Speaker, as with every other program, there's limited funding for new entrants through the Fisheries Loan Board. And Mr. Speaker, as the Premier is probably aware, a lobster license or a crab license could cost anywhere from $250,000 to more than $1 million. So my question to the Premier is, what criteria is your government using to determine who qualifies for assistance under this program?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Honourable Member may understand that, in fact, the matter is much more complex than that. For a long time, it was a question of whether or not the licenses themselves actually were collateral. And as he may know, there have been various decisions before the court with respect to the question of whether or not they are collateral. I understand that these matters are continuing to work their way either through the courts or through the banking system itself, but we of course stand ready to assist young fishermen who are trying to acquire new licenses, and we will continue to do so.
The Honourable Member for Glace Bay on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, it's been brought to our attention that the Minister of Fisheries is selling or has sold his personal lobster license and vessel. Mr. Speaker, the issue that has been raised to us relates to the source of the funding for that purchase. Mr. Speaker, my question to the Premier is, will the Premier confirm whether financing for the sale of your Fisheries Minister's lobster license and vessel came through the Nova Scotia Fisheries Loan Board?
The Honourable the Premier.
No, Mr. Speaker, I cannot confirm that.
The Honourable the Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. In this morning's edition of the Chronicle Herald, the Deputy Premier stated that unions with contracts expiring can judge for themselves that 1% raises are what the province can afford, and I quote, "I believe that would be a signal worth taking," end of quote. But the Premier, in the same article, stated that the Deputy Premier's comment is not necessarily the case. My question for the Premier is this. Is there a breakdown in communication between the Premier and his deputy, or is there truly a conflict within the Cabinet?
Oh.
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I can confirm there's no conflict in the Cabinet. I know she's very concerned about that, but there is none. And the fact of the matter is that both the Deputy Premier and myself are obviously very concerned about the financial wherewithal of the province to be able to respond to, you know, all of the contractual obligations that the province has, including those that are contained in collective bargaining. And what the Deputy Premier said is absolutely right. It's no secret at all. It's a signal to everyone. It's a signal to the province that, in fact, we know something that the former members of government apparently didn't know, and that is there is a limit to the money of the government.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I think it's fairly clear that they were conflicting messages. So my question to the Premier is this. Who should Nova Scotians believe after reading this morning's edition of the Herald? The Premier or the Deputy Premier?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's clear that the Deputy Premier and myself are both on the same page when it comes to the question of contract negotiations. We actually believe, Mr. Speaker, that this province has to live within its means, and we make no secret of that. That we've said that throughout the election campaign, and at that time, people were able to judge: did they believe in the approach that we took, or did they believe in the approach taken by the former government? And we know how that turned out.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And yes, the Premier is right about one thing. They're both on the same page, the front page of the Herald. So my final supplementary to the Premier is this. Both union and non-union employees in this province provide a valuable service, and both groups deserve the same respect. Will the Premier advise his deputy of the government's position before the Deputy Premier once again misleads Nova Scotians with a statement that cannot be supported by the Premier?
I will recognize the Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The reality is, Mr. Speaker, that the province of Nova Scotia has a serious problem with its provincial revenues, with its financing, and the members opposite know, as it was contained in the Deloitte report, that government put us on an unsustainable path when it came to the budgets of this province. And we are going to take the necessary measures in order to be able to correct that and make sure that debt and deficit will not become the legacy to the people of this province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Yesterday, your government announced 1,800 non-unionized public servants would receive no raise or perhaps a 1% increase, not the 2.9% increase given to unionized government employees. The Premier has repeatedly stated that he wants to be the Premier for all Nova Scotians. Does the Premier really mean for all unionized Nova Scotians? So my question to the Premier is, why are you creating two different classes of public servants in this province, one that deserves a raise and one that doesn't?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As the honourable member may know, the previous contracts were, of course, signed by the previous government. When this government came into power, we had the unfortunate duty of having to hire an outside, independent accountancy firm in order to audit what had happened. We did that. We reviewed it. And unfortunately, it was not what we would have liked to have found. What we found was a massive deficit. We're taking the appropriate measures to deal with it.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yesterday, your Deputy Premier sent out what he said was a clear signal to unions with contracts set to expire that 1% is what's going to be on the table and no more. Later, the Premier told reporters his Deputy Premier was wrong and that the collective bargaining process can't be predetermined. However, the Minister of Education claims the government has been, and I'm quoting here, quite upfront with everyone in terms of knowing how much money is available. Mr. Speaker, the Premier and his ministers seem to be having a little problem at staying on the same page. And you can't chalk this one up to growing pains. So my question to the Premier is, what is it? Is the 1% a clear signal or not?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There is no contradiction between what the members of government are saying. The only problem that the members opposite have is that they're not listening to what we're having to say, and that is that there is not an unlimited amount of money in this province, and we are here to make sure that the collective bargaining is conducted in good faith and that the people of this province are not left with a legacy of debt and deficit. What about that? Doesn't he understand?
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Deputy Premier may have slipped up yesterday and told the truth, but the message was loud and clear. It is 1% collective bargaining or not. When the Premier was in opposition, he believed in the collective bargaining process. So my question for the Premier is, why are your ministers negotiating in the press and not allowing the collective bargaining process to run its course?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, that's not the case. In fact, as we said, we are dedicated to ensuring that the collective bargaining process is respected. Unlike the members opposite, so when they were in government, rolled back wages and legislated contracts, Mr. Speaker.
The Leader of the Official Opposition on a new question.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Premier. Yesterday, we got another insight to how this government will deal with unionized workers. While in opposition, these members repeatedly insisted that government has a role to play in contract negotiations with government employees. They were quick to call the former government silent partners. However, the Minister of Education has refused to intervene in the impending strike at Nova Scotia Community College. So my question for the Premier is, will you now practice what you preached and direct your Minister of Education to meet with both sides of this dispute?
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, the bargaining table is available to both parties. If they want to use it, they're welcome to do so. They're welcome to do so. That is the whole point of respecting collective bargaining, is to ensure that there is a forum for which those negotiations can take place.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. These words may be familiar to the Premier because he spoke them in opposition. He may have done that too, Mr. Speaker, but I don't know. Speaking about QP support workers and their dispute with the Cabretton Regional Victoria School Board, the Premier said, and I quote, "This strike is about fairness and it is about the respect that we give Cabretton workers of QP 5050, the same wages and benefits enjoyed by their colleagues doing the same work on mainland Nova Scotia," end of quote. What the Premier is now doing is what he fought against in opposition. What a difference an election will make. Yeah. So my question to the Premier is, will he instruct his Minister of Education to give the faculty and staff and support staff at NSCC the fairness and respect they deserve.
The Honourable the Premier.
Pardon me. The answer to the member opposite, to the Leader of the Official Opposition, is of course we believe that all the members of that bargaining unit should get the same pay and benefits regardless of where they work in the province.
The Honourable Leader of the Official Opposition on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The Minister of Education seems more concerned with making a point to other public service sectors facing contract negotiations than the 25,000 students who are in limbo because of this government's position. And I remind once again, Mr. Speaker, what the Premier said a similar situation when he was in opposition. And I quote, "I am at a loss to explain why the government ignores their role in this situation," end of quote. Indeed, Mr. Speaker, why? So my question to the Premier is, why is your government ignoring the role they play in this impasse?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the answer is we're not. We understand very clearly. We're the funding vehicle for the Nova Scotia Community College. We understand that. It's up to the community college and their negotiating team to negotiate the contract with the unionized workers. It's that simple. We intend to allow collective bargaining to take place at the table.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question through you is to the Minister of Finance. Mr. Speaker, it's bad enough the Premier and the Deputy Premier are at odds over who knows what said what and understands what's going on with employee wage settlements. Now the Minister of Finance has joined the fray, but this time it's over the NDP's independent audit. Mr. Speaker, either the Minister of Finance has amnesia or hasn't tweaked his boss's lingo yet. Yesterday, in estimates, the Minister of Finance's amnesia struck again. The NDP didn't conduct an audit, but now I would quote a financial review. He indicated any talk of an independent audit was just the Premier and basically election talk. Well, Mr. Speaker, the people of Nova Scotia clearly understood the Premier, the NDP party, and what the auditor's undertaking was to be. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister inform this House who's correct and in charge, him or the Premier?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I think Hansard will show that what the member has purported to have happened in estimates yesterday never happened. It's a complete misrepresentation of what was said yesterday. But, Mr. Speaker, I will say this. The Deloitte report shows that the previous government put this province on an unsustainable path, Mr. Speaker. And the fact that that party, the third party, would focus on the title on the cover rather than the contents shows us why it is that that government put us on that unsustainable path. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I know that the member for King's West was in the committee room and members of his caucus, and thankfully this House has a hazard. So does that committee room, and it reflects other than what that minister has just said here. The Minister of Finance, Mr. Speaker, must be trying to downplay the Premier's $100,000 independent audit that was to determine the state of the province's books. While the Minister of Finance is desperate to distance himself from the Premier on this matter, what is clear is that the auditors did report, did give advice, and that the Minister of Finance decided to selectively ignore Deloitte. Yes. Mr. Speaker, the auditors clearly said that prepaid should not be done on borrowed money, a move that in the spring the now Finance Minister would also be diametrically opposed to. Now the amnesia deepens as the Minister has reduced a measure which he was against, and the now Premier and his NDP caucus were against. Mr. Speaker, will the Minister of Finance come clean with this House and admit that his political posturing and his expensive advice was really an election ploy that he's abandoned and now disagrees on the position, words and actions of his own Premier?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, what the Deloitte report shows is that the previous government put this province on an unsustainable path that if we had continued down the road that they put us on, we would have had a deficit of $1.3 billion within 3 years, that our debt would have been $16.7 billion in 3 years, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, that was an unsustainable path, and the people of Nova Scotia voted for change, Mr. Speaker, and that is what we will deliver.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton North on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, Nova Scotians, and it's evident here today, are now starting to see the pattern of bad decision-making, bad judgment, and lack of ability within the Cabinet to even communicate their own policies and actions. The Minister of Finance and the Premier were quick to assail the previous government of being, and I quote, inept, dishonest, and incompetent, end quote. They must, Mr. Speaker, well, Mr. Speaker, they must have been looking at a mirror when they were practicing those lines here today. Mr. Speaker, the minister has his own words and actions to eat now. His flip-flops, double-talk, and an inability to effectively lead the finance of this province is painfully evident and getting costly, $100,000 at a time for each consultant.
Is there a
Mr.
question?
Mr. Speaker, my question to the minister is, since this was just election talk, why did he spend over $100,000 on an unnecessary auditor through this deficit financing actions of his government?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, during the recent election campaign, we promised an independent review of the province's books, Mr. Speaker, and that is exactly what we delivered. And that review shows that the previous government put us on an unsustainable path. And, Mr. Speaker, we will not follow them down that path.
The Honourable Member for King's North, or King's West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I feel like my question has already been introduced today. One of the very first actions of this government was to commission a review of the state of the province's finances. I like audit better because it was used on 21 news stories during the election. This report cost Nova Scotians $100,000 and was released with great fanfare. In the report, one of the first actions it recommended, and I quote, for recurring assistance payments, avoid one-time or prepayments, end of quote. Mr. Speaker, one of the first actions that this government took was to ignore the specific advice that Nova Scotians paid $100,000 for and move university assistance from next year's budget to this year's budget. My question to the minister is this: why did the government choose to go against the very advice which they sought?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, we dealt with this question at length yesterday in the estimates process, but the message doesn't seem to have gotten through, so let me repeat it one more time. Mr. Speaker, the previous government shifted money around using the University Memorandum of Understanding, putting the better part of 2 years funding in a single year. That was a distortion of the province's financial situation. And what the Liberal Party is advocating is substituting one distortion for another. Mr. Speaker, we have 1 year of university funding in one budget. Mr. Speaker, what could be more accountable than that?
The Honourable Member for King's West on your first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, the MOU doesn't run out until the spring of 2011, so the minister didn't end this agreement. It would be worthwhile to read the 100,000 piece of advice one more time from Duluth. Government should, and I quote, match grants to the year in which expenses are incurred by universities, end of quote. Mr. Speaker, because of this prepayment, grants to match the expenses in the 2010-11 fiscal year are now $0. The real distortion. My question is this. Mr. Speaker, will the minister explain how this prepayment will help anyone in Nova Scotia who is not sitting across from me right now?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We dealt with this question at some length in estimates yesterday, including that very same question. So let me answer the question again in the House. The previous government introduced a distortion into the province's finances by paying two years of university funding in a single year, Mr. Speaker. And what we did when we walked into office is, looking at the situation, we chose to bring this complex and unnecessarily complicated situation to an end by unwinding the Memorandum of Understanding while keeping our promises to university, Mr. Speaker. It is clearer, it is more accountable. What exactly is the Liberal Party complaining about?
The Honourable Member for Kings West on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, this isn't simply a disagreement over semantics. The report was clear, and I quote, "For recurring assistance payments, avoid one-time or prepayments," end of quote. The ink was barely dry on this report, which Nova Scotians paid $100,000 for when they choose to make a prepayment. The minister didn't put an end to prepayments. The minister chose to prepay $341 million, inflate the deficit, dollars, even though Deloitte specifically advised him not to do this. He did exactly what he argued against when he was in opposition. He did exactly what his 100,000 advisor told him not to do. Mr. Speaker, my final question to the minister is this. Why is the NDP government paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for advice which they refuse to listen to?
The Honourable Minister of Finance.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The member asked the same question in estimates last night. We dealt with it at some length, but I'll repeat it for him again, Mr. Speaker. The previous government introduced a distortion into the province's finances. We believe that the clearest, most transparent, most accountable way of accounting for university spending is to have 1 year's payment in 1 year's budget, Mr. Speaker, and that is exactly what we did.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question through you is to the Premier. An advertisement placed in this morning's edition of the Chronicle Herald by the Nova Scotia Teachers Union says the time to talk is over. And I would table this, please.
Hold it up.
In the union's 114-year history, members have never engaged in a province-wide strike. Now 900 community college staff are on the brink of this being their first. Mr. Premier, the union believes that your Minister of Education has chosen to treat members of the NSCC faculty differently than the NSTU members in our public schools. Mr. Premier, what do you have to say to the faculty of NSCC?
The Honourable the Premier.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. What I say is I hope that the members of the faculty at NSCC will be able to conclude an agreement with the NSCC so that there isn't a disruption in the education of the students in those facilities, Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, through you again to the Premier, there are 25,000 full and part-time students feeling considerable stress and anxiety, wanting to know whether their school year will continue. Yeah. What does the Premier have to say to the students today about the potential disruption in their studies?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I want to thank the Leader of the Conservative Party for her question. I think the question does, in fact, adequately set out the very deep concern that the members of this government have with respect to the negotiations there at the community college. We are concerned about what may happen with respect to the education of those students. What we are doing, though, Mr. Speaker, is we're ensuring that the collective bargaining process has the freedom to go forward, and we'd encourage both parties to get back to the table and to find a reasonable conclusion.
The Leader of the Progressive Conservative Party on her final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I haven't seen the concern. After the faculty and the professional support employees at the Community College voted overwhelmingly on September 22nd in support of job action, the Minister of Education was asked about a contingency plan. She had no plan. We are now very close to strike action. The minister must have a plan by now. Will the premier share that contingency plan so that students can have some reason to believe this government cares about them?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you know, this is a matter between the administration of the community college and their union. And Mr. Speaker, I'm confident that they have taken into account all of the variables that are necessary in this process. I'm confident that they have put in place their own contingency plan with respect to this matter. And what I'd like to say to all members of the House, Mr. Speaker, is just simply that we'd like to see this matter resolved. We would hope the parties would go back to the table and understand that what is at stake here is not just what's good for the province, not just what's good for the staff, but also what is good for the students.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove.
Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Minister of Education. Yesterday, the minister refused to address the issue of a looming Nova Scotia Community College strike, despite the fact that the collective bargaining process is at a standstill. I would remind the minister that both the community college negotiators and the Nova Scotia Teachers Union agree. Community college faculty and support staff deserve the 2.9% increase. Yesterday, the NSTU said that the minister was shirking her responsibilities. It indicated a strike date would be set. My question to the minister, does the minister realize that if she doesn't take action today, a strike date will be set tomorrow?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm very aware of what's happening, and I certainly share my government's concern with all the parties involved in the collective bargaining process. And the best thing that I can do as Minister of Education is to stay out of the negotiations, to allow it to go to its conclusion, and to trust that reasonable people on all sides of the negotiating table will come to a reasonable conclusion and protect their interests, their best interests, and also the best interests of the student population of the community college system. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on her first supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, again, the minister is neglecting her responsibilities. By refusing to address this issue, the minister is putting the futures of thousands of students in jeopardy. A strike will cause a major disruption for students who need to get out into the workforce. In the past, the NSCC has had an enviable job placement rate of 92% for its grads, but a strike may threaten this success. A Stats Can study released today said that young people are feeling the effects of the recession more than any other demographic. We need to help them, not hurt them. My question for the minister, why is this minister making it harder for students to graduate and find work?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My government realizes that these negotiations are very tough on both sides, on all parties. And all I can say is that we are encouraging both sides to get back to negotiations so that they can come to a reasonable conclusion. The negotiating process in no way reflects on the value of the academic excellence that the college provides, nor the quality of teaching provided by the faculty and the professional staff. And I just want to say that we understand the anxiety and apprehension and concern expressed by all involved in the negotiations. But by staying out of it and allowing them to come to a natural conclusion is the best way to support the process. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Bedford Birch Cove on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I fail to understand how the Deputy Premier is saying that there's a 1% deal out there, that everybody's going to get 1%, is negotiating in good faith. Yeah. Mr. Speaker, our economy needs college graduates, and despite these tough economic times, NSCC graduates have the skills to get work and contribute to Nova Scotia's success. My question to the Minister, how are your government's actions helping more NSCC students graduate and enter the workforce?
The Honourable Minister of Education.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Or sorry, Mr. Speaker. I'm back in estimates. Mr. Speaker, I could stand on my feet for four straight hours and talk about the strengths of the community college system in Nova Scotia. And as I said earlier, in no way does the collective bargaining process reflect the value of the college system, the professional staff, nor the students. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Through you, my questions to the Premier. Myself and our caucus would like to know what the Premier's position is with regards to actions or comments by ministers when litigation is pending against a government or a body funded by government.
The Honourable, the Premier.
Well, Mr. Speaker, ministers are free to meet with whoever they like to meet with.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, we'll try to be a little bit clearer on my first supplementary. Through you to the Premier. Recently, the Minister of Economic and Rural Development and the Minister of Environment and Fisheries visited with an individual at his private home who has launched a $700,000 lawsuit against the Southwest Shore Development Authority, and the minister has yet to meet with the board, the RDA board, in Southwest Nova or anywhere in the province. The authority consists of mayors, wardens, and other elected officials, and local volunteer business people, and the Minister of Economic and Rural Development is aware that he is responsible for the operations of the Regional Development Authority across Nova Scotia. So my question is, why would you, as a premier, allow the two ministers to meet with a complainant involved in a six-figure lawsuit against the Southwest Shore Development Authority?
The Honourable the Premier.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not sure that the member understands. There's no conflict.
The Honourable Member for Yarmouth on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, through you to the Premier, I can assure the Premier that this member understands. It's that Premier that doesn't understand. That's a Premier and a government that was going to be open and transparent. Mr. Speaker, their minister hasn't even had the audacity to meet with the RDAs or the Association of RDAs, but yet he'll go and meet with a complainant for a $700,000 lawsuit against one of the RDAs. So, Mr. Speaker, through you to the Premier, members of the community are aware of this visit and perceive it that it's a conflict of interest situation exists. I want to know today if the Premier will look at the Ministerial Code of Conduct and then commit to ask a conflict of interest commissioner to investigate what transpired at this meeting and whether the two ministers I have mentioned should have even been at this gentleman's private home, something that doesn't sound right to the people of Southwest Nova, and the people of Southwest Nova deserve to have an answer. Not a smile by the Premier.
The Honourable the Premier.
Mr. Speaker, you know, I've been around the House for a while, but that's one of the most bizarre questions I think I've heard. You know, last week, the members right there were berating me for not meeting with the mayor of Cape Breton municipality, who is involved in a lawsuit against the province. Now, which way do you want it? Do you want us to meet with people or not meet with people?
The order, order, please. The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is for the Minister of Energy. Mr. Speaker, on September 29, 2009, the Minister of Finance suggested in the Halifax Herald to their editorial board that he is concerned about the cost of the EnerGuide program and that maybe that's a good place to start with cuts. My question to the Minister of Energy, are you planning to cut or change, and I will table the article, Mr. Speaker. Are you planning to make cuts or cap the EnerGuide program?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for this important question. You know, Mr. Speaker, I want you to know one of the great privileges I have as a Minister of Energy is working very closely with the people in Conserve Nova Scotia. For example, this weekend I had the opportunity to go to Exhibition Park and spend 2.5 hours listening to requests and meeting with individual Nova Scotians about the popularity of programs to conserve Nova Scotia. Person after person came forward and asked whether they could be involved in one program after another. In fact, I want the member to know they actually asked for personal members of Conserve Nova Scotia. Mr. Donald Dodge in particular was asked, you know, what can he possibly do for some of these programs? Good people at Conserve Nova Scotia promoted these programs. These programs are extremely popular. And let me assure you, we will make the right decision so these programs can continue to serve Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your first supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And the Minister of Finance seems to think he didn't say that. Well, I'll quote him. When he said, to be financially responsible, you have to set an upper end to your funding envelope, and went on to complain that at the moment there is no end to the funding envelope. That, Mr. Speaker, is a cut. Well, Mr. Speaker, that differs. Like other issues we've heard about in question period today, the ministers can't seem to agree because during estimates, the Minister of the Environment said, and I quote from Hansard, any time you have a tool that you can reduce energy is good, and the answer is yes. That is an obvious. It is a no-brainer. When you can assist people to cut down on household use and put dollars into their pockets to create less emissions overall in Nova Scotia, to me, if you ask any Nova Scotian, you're going to get the answer yes. So my question to the Minister is, Why is the Minister of Finance talking about capping a program that's very popular and helps low-income families reduce energy costs in their homes?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you again, Mr. Speaker. Over 21,000 Nova Scotian families have been involved in the EnerGuide program since inception in 2007. Over 21,000 people involved in that program. And I want the member opposite, and I want the members of my side of the House here also to know that person after person is very much assured by the fact that Conserve is delivering important programs that we plan to continue. Let's be clear on one particular thing. If there's something good for Nova Scotians when it comes to energy, this government is going to make sure that it's on the side of Nova Scotians.
The Honourable Member for Dartmouth East on your final supplementary.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, the Minister of Energy is very good at giving speeches, but he's not very good at giving answers. And maybe if he spent less time trying to be the Minister of Community Services and the Minister of Finance spent less time trying to be the Minister of Energy, something would actually get done by that government. The fact is, Mr. Speaker, the fact of the matter is that this is a program which can help all Nova Scotians to contribute to reducing climate change gases and can help low-income families permanently reduce their energy costs. So, Mr. Speaker, I want to know why it is that the government is talking about cutting a program, and have they now joined Stephen Harper and don't believe in climate change?
The Honourable Minister of Energy.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the member opposite for the question, and I thank the member for Community Services for giving me that little bit of advice. But I want the Minister of Community Services to know that I just couldn't tell him that. The staff at Conserve Nova Scotia, excuse me, Mr. Speaker. The staff at Conserve Nova Scotia is extremely pleased with the budget that we are going to debate in this House during estimates. They are very relieved at the fact that many, 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 many Nova Scotians are continue to reach the services which they so richly deserve, because this government, this finance minister, and this minister of Conserve Nova Scotia is going to continue to deliver those services.
The Honourable Member for Richmond.
Mr. Speaker, last week Ontario exhibited leadership by joining New Brunswick and British Columbia in the initiation of a health care cost recovery lawsuit against tobacco companies. Yesterday, the province of Quebec signed on as well. 4 years ago, Nova Scotia passed legislation that would enable us to also show leadership. However, all of us recognize that legislation was but a first step, and much work had needed to be done within government before we too were ready to join our provincial counterparts in this lawsuit. So my question through you to the Minister of Justice is, could the Minister please outline what he has done on this file in his 108 days in office to get his government to the point where our province can proclaim Bill 222 and file the statement of claim against the tobacco companies?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Honourable Member for his question. I'll refer that over to the Minister of Health. If it's more appropriate there that it be answered.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I want to thank the Honourable Member for the question. It's an important question, Mr. Speaker. The province of Nova Scotia has a very good tobacco cessation strategy, Mr. Speaker. The act the member refers to indeed has yet to be proclaimed. We are watching very carefully the litigation as it proceeds in the provinces that the member referred to. That litigation is in the very, very earliest stages, Mr. Speaker. Thank you very much.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on your first supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, so much for leadership. Apparently now we're going to watch other provinces do litigation and then follow their lead after that. Mr. Speaker, Bill 222 was passed 4 years ago with the intention of allowing the province of Nova Scotia to prepare its legal case against Big Tobacco. At the time, we were one of the first provinces to enact such legislation. And yet here we are 108 days into this government, and the Minister of Justice has no idea what I'm talking about when it comes to enacting a lawsuit against Big Tobacco. So my question to the Premier, does your government even take the issue of fighting tobacco companies for what they've cost our healthcare system seriously, or this is just something to sit back and watch like a regular TV show?
The Honourable the Premier.
I want to thank the member from Richmond for his question. It's a good question. I have reviewed the file, in fact, I watched the coverage with respect to the entrance of the other provinces into this particular lawsuit. And what I can tell them is that we are reviewing it very carefully. We know that it will cost the province of Nova Scotia millions of dollars to get into this lawsuit, to share the costs. We're looking to determine whether or not at this particular time that's an investment that we can afford to make.
The Honourable Member for Richmond on your final supplementary.
Mr. Speaker, I would suggest to the Premier that it's an investment we can't afford not to make on behalf of the people in Nova Scotia. This province and families throughout this entire province have seen the devastating impact that tobacco use has had. And as legislators, we know the devastating financial impact that it has had for us here in our province in healthcare costs, which, regardless of the tobacco cessation programs, continue to be a real issue for the people of Nova Scotia. Today, what we're hearing is that this government doesn't seem to know who's on first when it comes to who is actually going to initiate this litigation. So my final supplementary to the Premier, can you at least tell us which is the lead department on this file, or do you plan on donning your robes and taking this case to court yourself?
The Honourable the Premier.
I want to thank the member opposite for his question. He could join me, could set second chair. I wouldn't mind that. Mr. Speaker, He's right about this. It's a serious question. We've looked at it. We've looked at the file. It is actually a question of whether or not we put the investment into this file at this period of time. These are, as you know, budget questions. We have to balance off the fact that, yes, we have to actually spend money. That's what it costs in order to enter lawsuits. So, Mr. Speaker, we're going to continue to consider it as we go forward. We'll look for what we consider to be the right time to enter the suit.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question, Mr. Speaker, through you is for the Minister of Justice.
He doesn't know.
Mr. Speaker, it is disturbing for a member of this House with a background in law enforcement to become the Minister of Justice and Attorney General and then move away from a business case that supports a 200-bed facility to replace the Antigonish Correctional Center. Now, the Minister, of all of those that are in Cabinet, should know about the pressing public safety need and be pushing this project forward. However, instead, the NDP have yanked the project after over $1 million was invested in planning for this and the North Nova Correctional Facility in Spring Hill. Mr. Speaker, will the minister come clean with this House on why the NDP have turned their back on the working families of Antigonish County currently employed and who were looking forward to be employed in a new facility? They were expecting, Mr. Speaker, they were expecting a better deal, not a raw deal from this minister.
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The question from the Honourable Member from the other side, I don't know if he reads the newspapers or follows the news, but I have said consistently, time after time after time, that the issue of the correctional facility is under review, and once the business case is completed, a decision will be made. At no time has it been said anywhere that the building is being built or not being built in Antigonish, or whether it's being built in Spring Hill or not being built. As I visited your colleague there, we had a good lengthy discussion about the matter. Consultation has been carried out. Consultation has been carried out in Antigonish as well. So let's the process go and follow the newspaper. You'll get your messages if you're not getting them here.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your first supplementary.
You know, Mr. Speaker, I do read the paper, and I got to tell you that this minister has been shirking his responsibilities for a long time. Those words ring hollow with the good people of Antigonish County. They are there wondering where the Minister of Justice priorities just are. The current facility is in need of replacement. The site selection was underway. Design was underway. The minister's office, however, has said to transportation, stop doing that work. Here's a letter I'm going to table that shows the work that was underway, and it's dated April the 3rd of this year. Now, Mr. Speaker, will this minister confirm that he remains committed to the people of Antigonish County, or is he playing politics with a very, very serious issue?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you for the question. I repeat myself again. Once the business case is completed, decisions will be made. It's been said in this House before. It's been said publicly on numerous occasions, and I stand by my position. No decision has been made. It would be inappropriate for me to comment otherwise.
The Honourable Member for Cape Breton West on your final supplementary.
Good luck. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, the Minister of Justice knows better than to be playing cross politics with such an important subject. The people of Antigonish and Spring Hill both know the business case is solid for their facilities in their chosen communities. Right. It is known that your office does not help to make this happen in a hurry. You refuse to come clean with the people of Antigonish, and you refuse to come plea with the people of Spring Hill. Mr. Speaker, one more time, will the Minister of Justice honour the commitment to the people of Antigonish and do the right thing and commit the 200-bed facility? A yes or a no, Mr. Minister? Yes or no?
The Honourable Minister of Justice.
Mr. Speaker, I thank you. Thank you for the question. What's interesting in the question is I heard it there. He says a 200-bed facility. Is he talking a 200-bed facility for Anakinish, or is he talking one for Spring Hill, or is he talking? Said that we're either building one or we're building two facilities. That's the general direction of the business case. And when we have that, a decision will be made.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park.
Thank you. Mr. Speaker, my question is for the Health Minister. Mr. Speaker, family doctors are the backbone of our health system and the first point of contact for any Nova Scotians with health issues. When people cannot find a family doctor, it causes personal distress and anxiety, it increases the ill health of Nova Scotians, and it puts a big strain on our emergency and acute care sectors, especially in rural Nova Scotia. Mr. Speaker, on the 24th of July this year, in 2009, the president of Doctors Nova Scotia, in an article in the Herald, said that this year, that in this report, that 21% of family doctors plan to retire in the next 5 years. So he signaled a looming crisis in the availability of family doctors in the province. So my question to the Minister of Health is, will the minister table before the end of the day here in the House the list of communities where those 21% of family doctors are expected to retire in the next 5 years?
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for bringing an important issue to the floor of the House. Family physicians are an integral and central part of our health care system, and indeed in all of our health human resources we're looking at an age crunch, the demographic crunch, and so the planning for replenishing our family physicians as well as other health human resources is very important. We've increased the number of seats at Dalhousie's Medical School, for example, in the last year or so, Mr. Speaker. And with respect to the stats that the Honourable Member is looking for, if we have them in the department, I'd be happy to provide them to the Honourable Member, but perhaps they were stats that Doctors Nova Scotia keep, and I wouldn't have access to those immediately. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on your first supplementary.
Thank you. I'd like to suggest that it's important enough that the department should have a list of where the doctors are as they're planning to retire, because you can't plan adequately if you don't have that kind of information. Yeah, Mr. Speaker, yesterday the New Brunswick government announced in a big announcement that they had five new family doctors coming to their province. And despite the fact that we know there are already communities facing a lot of shortages of doctors right now, we don't hear any announcements from Nova Scotia's government. And I know the minister may agree that DHAs take a lead in the recruitment of doctors, but New Brunswick's taking an active lead. Their government is stepping in and looking for doctors. So my question to the minister is, will the minister tell the members of this House whether or not Nova Scotia has a physician human resource strategy, as other provinces do? And that would be a plan that would lay out the recruitment of doctors.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I thank the Honourable Member for her question. First of all, Mr. Speaker, doctors are independent contractors, if you will, Mr. Speaker, and they're under no obligation to provide their retirement plans to the Department of Health. Mr. Speaker, both the DHAs and the Department of Health have an active recruiter in terms of recruiting doctors to the various areas, family physicians as well as specialists. And the recruitment process has been in place for many, many years, Mr. Speaker, with a variety of incentives that are available for underserviced, particularly rural parts of the province. Thank you.
The Honourable Member for Halifax Clayton Park on her final supplementary.
Well, Mr. Speaker, what I heard the minister say today is that there is no plan for the recruitment of physicians, that we have a couple of people assigned to that, but no physician human resource plan for this province. And in order to get a handle on where we're going to need doctors, we need to have the data. And I'm sure that any doctor would be happy to share that with the minister. We know, for example, in the Valley, that in the area just between Aylesford and Bridgetown, there are 11 family doctors, and 7 of them are over the age of 62. 7 of them, they go between the ages of 62 and 74, so it's likely to be an area where we're going to need more physicians. So I'd like to ask the minister when she intends to order a physician recruitment or physician human resource strategy for our province so that we can get ahead of this wave of retirements.
The Honourable Minister of Health.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker, and I do want to thank the Honourable Member for the question because it is an important topic. Mr. Speaker, the province of Nova Scotia has more physicians per capita than any other province in the country. However, Mr. Speaker, the distribution of physicians in the province may not necessarily match the patient requirements around the province, the population requirements. And the Department of Health is very aware of that. This minister is very aware of that. This government is very aware of that. And we are engaged in discussion.
The time for oral question period has ended.
This podcast was previously aired on Legislative Television. The Speaker of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly grants permission to record the televised proceedings of the legislature for use in schools and for other purposes, such as private study, research, review, or newspaper summary. Television and radio broadcasters may make use of recorded excerpts of the televised proceedings in their news or public affairs programs for the purposes of fair and accurate reports of proceedings. Program material may not be used for political party advertising, election campaigns, or any other politically partisan activity. Any other commercial use or rebroadcast of these televised proceedings requires the express written approval of the Speaker.